Welcome to Crossroads, a podcast from the National's review section. Today we're speaking to Anthony Lowenstein about his new book called Disaster Capitalism. It looks at how disaster relief has been turned into a profit-making game. What is disaster capitalism?
Disaster capitalism is when people or corporations are making money from misery. So that could be from aid, immigration, mining or war. So in my book, Disaster Capitalism, in the film, which has the same name, which is For the Work in Progress, I investigate in a range of countries from Afghanistan to Haiti, Papua New Guinea, Greece, the US, UK and Australia, examples of this economic model. That sounds all very dry and academic, but actually I'm talking to people on the ground who are suffering because of that system. So two issues that obviously in some ways are the most talked about at the moment, I guess you would say, is immigration, where Europe, for example, of course, is facing huge numbers of people coming in from the Middle East and North Africa. And what people don't know less about is the huge numbers of corporations in Europe making a massive amount of money from that influx of refugees. So that's one issue. I also document that in the US and the UK and Australia. And in Afghanistan as well, where a war that's been going on and America invaded in October 2001, so 15 or so years now, the US government has invested on paper $110 billion, but actually a lot of that money has gone to private corporations, which has never delivered the goods to Afghan people themselves. So disaster capitalism really is corporations making money from misery and little accountability for that.
I want to talk about the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. In the book, you argue that, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you argue that sort of celebrity-headed charity efforts rest on the perception that locals cannot really look after themselves. So do you think that international charity organizations are actually hurting the countries they are supposedly trying to help?
Yeah, a lot of the aid organizations that came in from the US and elsewhere were there for profit. And the reason the profit motive is so problematic there is that there's actually no real incentive to do a good job. So, for example, USAID, which is the main U.S. aid arm of the U.S. government, invested billions and billions of dollars. So they claim. The Obama administration and Hillary Clinton, as her then Secretary of State, claim that the money that was going to the earthquake relief was going to help Haitians. The truth is that the majority of that money actually never left the U.S. What I mean by that is that it went to U.S. corporations who were on paper doing work in Haiti itself, but in reality, so much of that money never actually went to the Haitian people. So when you go to Haiti, and I've been there twice in the last couple of years, you find a lot of Haitians who are pretty upset. They're pissed off with the fact that they actually realize all this money has been spent on their country, but actually they've seen very little of it. So I'm not arguing that every single aid organization in Haiti is a leech and didn't do any good work. There was definitely some aid organizations doing good work. The problem, I think, is, and I show this in detail, both in Afghanistan and in Haiti in the book, there's actually little accountability for aid organizations in these countries. So when a earthquake or disaster strikes, aid organization regularly calls for support. You know, all of us have seen those ads on TV or online. The problem is that so often that money, a lot of it at least, does not go to the people in need. And what I would say to people is that if you want to help a country or its people, be aware of the fact that if you don't help organizations that have a direct connection to the people themselves in the country, you're likely helping a Western aid organization more so than the people in need.
So how do you solve that problem? How do you ensure, or what kind of mechanism can you set up that ensures money's going to go to the right people and those in most in need?
It's a difficult question, isn't it? Because having been to a lot of these kind of countries in the last few years, for example, last year I was living in South Sudan. Now, South Sudan is the world's newest nation. It is economically broken. It was independent since 2011. And without the UN and aid organizations, the country would utterly collapse. There's been a civil war there that has killed roughly 100,000 people. So I'm not arguing in a place like that, that if those organizations pulled out tomorrow, the country would suddenly be fine. The government itself is killing its own people, so is incapable, unwilling to help its own people. The problem is, I think, in a place like there, or Haiti, which has essentially been a U.S. client state for 100 years, or Afghanistan, which has been at war for 40, that governments, foreign Western governments that are assisting those nations, actually have no real interest in the country itself becoming independent. In other words, they much prefer a situation where corporations from their own nations can make money from that disaster zone. So I'm not saying that in a conspiratorial sense. I'm saying that, for example, in Afghanistan or in Haiti, the U.S. government was directing policy to guarantee that U.S. corporations made money. Now, I'm not saying that because a U.S. corporation makes money in Afghanistan, that makes them evil. Far from it. Some of them did good work. But the U.S., for example, in Afghanistan has spent, since 2001 when they invaded, $110 billion U.S. dollars. It's the most amount of money spent on any so-called nation-building project ever. Mm. And the vast majority of that money has disappeared, either to corruption or to U.S. corporations not delivering on their goals. So ultimately, you have to ask yourself, well, who exactly is this aid money helping? Our USAID, as an example, gives a lot of money from the U.S. taxpayer to corporations who are going into places like Afghanistan and Haiti. And to me, if you're a U.S. taxpayer or a taxpayer anywhere else, and you're concerned about the kind of money that your government is giving, be a bit more aware of who you're donating to. It's actually quite possible now, with very simple internet research on Google, really, to find out which corporations and which aid organizations actually are employing and investing in the people.
I just want to go back to Afghanistan for a second. At least about 20,000 civilians have died since the war started in 2001. And yet, as you say, U.S. companies have made a lot of money, but it seems that billions of dollars have seemingly disappeared. How is it that there's so little accountability for taxpayers' money?
This is the $160 million dollar question. Ultimately, the Bush administration put in place, pretty much after 9/11, a contracting system where their mates, their friends, their corporate interests made huge amounts of money from the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And that was done with not a great deal of Democrat opposition. When Obama was a candidate in 2007 for president, he pledged to change the system, to bring a greater accountability to the U.S. contracting system. Just to clarify what that means, the U.S. government traditionally would have a system where the state would provide services. So the country goes to war and the U.S. government would pay for everything from the weapons to the housing to the food. And I'm not suggesting that is okay. I mean, I think to me the issue that America likes to go to war so often is the problem rather than whether it's done by a private interest or public purse. But the Bush administration put that on its head and argued that why should the public pay for these kinds of services when the private sector can do it better and cheaper? Mm-hmm. The fact is that the U.S. government under the Bush administration, and sadly despite what Obama pledged to do, has continued that, in fact deepened it during his presidency. There's no indication that will change in the last year of his presidency, now in 2016, that these corporations routinely fail to deliver on their goals. This is not just my opinion. This is the U.S. government itself putting out reports about contractors the U.S. government are employing. So, for example, a company like DynCorp, which has been training training Afghan and Iraqi soldiers. And anyone who's followed the news in the last few years knows that the Iraqi army pretty much collapsed in the face of an ISIS advance. And the Afghan forces, who number about 300,000, many of them are either failing or deserting or are not delivering. Now, I'm not blaming the Afghans per se for that. I'm blaming the fact that you have U.S. corporations that are being paid billions of dollars to deliver these services that simply are not delivering. And if you ask, well, why are they continuing to get more contracts, that's for two quick reasons. One, the lobbying system in the U.S. is so broken that various congressmen and women in their districts are lobbied by these corporations very effectively. And secondly, in the U.S. Congress itself, there's virtually no mechanism to actually hold these people to account. So the story I recently wrote for The National, you know, that was published, you know, by your paper, I show that CIGAR, which is a US government arm that is investigating contracting corruption, really, in Afghanistan particularly, and has found in the last years tens of billions of dollars of US taxpayer money going to both Afghan and Western corporations, mostly American corporations. It hasn't delivered. It simply has not delivered. But CIGAR itself says that there is little or no mechanism within the US government to hold these corporations and governments to account. That's the fundamental problem here. And it's a sad indictment, I think, of the US political system that when you have now a Republican under the Bush administration and Obama, a Democrat, essentially agreeing that there should be no accountability, regardless of what Obama has rhetorically said. After 15 years now of war, post 9/11, the chances of that changing is pretty slim. Whoever comes into power next year, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. So it's a strange reality where, A, there's not a great deal of public pressure in the US to change that, and the voices that are calling for greater accountability in America are far and few between. That's the fundamental problem.
So there's a failure in the political sense of accountability or on a mechanism to stop this. But what about the media, journalism? Are they failing as well to bring this to people's attention?
When I was in Afghanistan in 2015, doing some filming for the film Disaster Capitalism, I spoke to a number of people in the US embassy there about these questions. As in, why is there so little accountability? And their argument, and they weren't defending it, I might add, they were just explaining it, is that the turnover of staff is so high in these organizations. Within Afghanistan itself, people rotate 6 months, 9 months, very, very quickly.
And why is that? Then,
partly because it's part of the US military system where if you are working in the US embassy or you're a US soldier, your turnover rate is very, very high. I'm not saying that you're leaving the military, I'm saying that you are going to another posting or another position or you're going out of the country. Look, working in Afghanistan is tough, you know, it'd be difficult to work there. So I'm not particularly blaming people who want to go in and out. The problem is, though, that people who are making decisions, for example, saying, okay, I'm going to appoint this corporation to do this contract, by the time there's an ability to assess how effective that contract has been, that's gone.
Closer to the UAE, is there any examples of this type of disaster capitalism in the Middle East?
Huge amounts of foreign aid pouring in to Palestine, on the face of it, to help the Palestinian people. But the situation there is so deformed, Israeli companies are actually able to make money from the tiny amount of rebuilding which is going on after Israel goes into Gaza every 2 years and destroys whole neighborhoods. So it's an incredibly weird situation there. And that's really not just the fault of aid organizations. It's also the fault of an international system, which weirdly in some ways, particularly the European Union, which allows this skewed dynamic to exist. So I've often argued, and a lot of Palestinians argue this as well, and very progressive aid organizations say too, that their presence in the West Bank in some way, let alone in Gaza, actually perpetuates the problem. Because Israel knows that if they go into the West Bank or Gaza and destroy infrastructure or electricity plants or whatever it may be, aid organizations and corporations are going to want to rebuild the next day. Israel does not have to take responsibility for its own destruction. That's been happening now for decades.
To read Anthony's investigation into disaster capitalism in Afghanistan, visit thenational.ie. Thank you for listening.